thebesthome.com. Welcome. I'm your humble host, Chevy Chase, and this is National Lampoon's Vacation in Alaska, Day 4, Skagway. This is Episode 15 of the To-Do List Home podcast. Check engine light warnings and my approach to diagnosing them. Coming to you from the White Pass and Yukon Railroad in Skagway, Alaska, on my way up to the U.S.-Canadian border. More information on this podcast and others can be found at todolisthome.com. Today is August 31, 2011, and the song of the day is My Favorite Game by the Cardigans, recorded on Gran Turismo. Have a listen at amazon.com, and the link can be found in the show notes. What drives this? This is my way of paying back years of using the internet for research, learning and improving permaculture techniques to help build community, sufficiency, and reliance. Retiring at age 55 or younger. And the survivalpodcast.com. Go to the survivalpodcast.com today and learn how to live the good life if times get bad or even if they don't. If you listen to episodes 13 and 14, you know my family and I are in Alaska for a short bucket list visit. My father is responsible for inspiring me to make this trip, and he was supposed to be here on the train next to me. But life is cruel, and he was prevented from traveling the day before our intended departure. I might have been denied the opportunity to do something outrageous with my father, but fortunately I had planned for my family to join us. Although I cannot provide a good vacation for my father, I am doing a great job of giving my kids and wife a trip of a lifetime. This is about the most outrageous trip I have ever made, and I am glad we are here together as a family. We arrived in the Inland Passage of Alaska last night, and when I awoke, I immediately felt the excitement that must greet all first-time visitors to this last of the American frontier. The pulse quickens once the white peaks of the mountains in the distance meet your eyes, and you immediately begin to feel that you are truly removed from all concerns and commitments. I am awestruck. A journey I have wanted to do since I was in the Army in Washington State in the late 80s, and now that I am here, it is more than what I ever expected. Traveling by cruise ship to get here is not what I had anticipated when I used to think of Alaska as a place I would like to visit. But now that I came this way, I am convinced that there is no other way to travel here. The first famous Alaskan explorers, such as George Vancouver, John Muir, and William S. Cooper, traveled to Alaska by ship, and traveling in similar fashion, although much more pampered, allows for me and my family to enjoy the same views that they must have seen when they first approached this frontier. Unfortunately, there were several things I noticed upon my arrival in Skagway that made me go, this is weird. First, there were three cruise ships docked at the same time in this tiny port. Skagway has a population of about 400 people, and on this Wednesday, for at least a few hours, their population explodes to at least 6,400. That's a 1,600% increase in population, and that's not counting the other 3,000 crew members that don't leave the ships. When I looked out at the walkway to town, all I could think of was that this was the invasion of the tourists. Invading what, I wondered. I was here to ride a train for 20 miles through the mountains. Well, this little hamlet of a port, if you could even call it that, has been staged to adapt to the cruise lines that own these ports of calls in Alaska. I guess that's the saddest thing. There is no real Alaska you enter when you get off the ship, as Vancouver, Muir, and Cooper experienced. The main street in Skagway is about one-third of a mile long, and it's cluttered with jewelry shops specializing in diamonds and other shops selling a whole bunch of made-in-China products that you don't need, with Alaska written on them. Shirts, hats, dishes, ulu knives, keychains, and much more. Everything made in China. So much for escaping the bullshit of the modern global economy. Fortunately, They make good fudge and chocolate in these little towns, and that's what makes up my souvenirs for friends and co-workers. So beware, I'm not advocating trips to the China outlets of Alaska. I'm advocating adventure and freedom, but there is a price to be paid to the cruise lines that bring you here. One of the things I learned today that relate to the last episode about testing my preps for survival was that the original gold seekers in Alaska who had landed in Skagway had a 550-mile trek up the mountain passes to get to the elusive gold fields in the Yukon Territory of Canada. In order to get into Canada, they had to have at least 1,000 pounds of materials, including food, to last them 1 year. This was designed to deter gold seekers from visiting and using resources without providing a long-term commitment. The average man could carry a 50-pound pack 20 miles through the treacherous pass to the Canadian border. That meant for a man to try to find and stake a claim, he first had to make the trip 20 times before he could begin the treasure hunt. I can't even begin to imagine the pain and heartbreak that most of those men must have endured. The Russian honeybee hive. Will there be honey for me to harvest this year? The answer is no. If you have listened to past episodes, you know that I placed 2 honey supers on the hive about 5 weeks ago. As a result of the August 24 inspection and research in my books and online, I determined that the bees need all the honey they can produce this year for themselves in order to survive the approaching winter. So after a brief hiatus, I resumed regular feedings of the bees with a 2/3 sugar water mixture with a little honey bee healthy added for extra essential nutrients. Today's gardening chore. I have to order garlic and onions for planting, if I still can. I can't do that while on this ship with internet use charges of 75 cents per minute. I'll wait until I'm home after Labor Day to do that. On my to-do list today is check engine light warning. In episode 14, I discussed how our recent camping trip to the Shenandoah Mountains in western Virginia offered a great opportunity to test our preps for bugging out of our home in a hurry. Well, what I didn't tell you was that once I made the final turn of the day into our campsite area, on top of the mountains with a fully loaded Toyota 4Runner, the check engine warning light came on. What a shitty bummer that was. Here we were, hungry, tired, on top of an isolated mountain with a thunderstorm fast approaching, and the check engine light with TRC and VCS warnings came on. Well, I determined immediately that we needed to set up camp and worry about the check engine light after we got off the mountain. So we enjoyed ourselves while on the mountain in the rain, and the next day we awoke to sunny skies. I first reviewed the owner's manual for my 4Runner and was dismayed to learn again that the advice for a check engine light warning was to take the vehicle to a Toyota dealer. I knew from past experience that if I took the vehicle to a Toyota dealer, that they would make a big deal out of the warning light and charge me upwards of $1,400 before being able to even retrieve my vehicle. So I proceeded to do a basic check of the vehicle fluids and tires and other obvious items. I only noticed that the coolant was just a little low and thought that I better try to find some before we hit the highway home. I checked at the one and only store in the park and was indeed able to find engine coolant. I mixed it up according to directions and poured it in until full. Of course, the check engine light did not go out, but I felt confident enough to drive home, and I would look into getting the warning lights checked the next day. I knew if I took the vehicle to the local Sunoco station that they would charge me at least $80 just to hook up their diagnostics machine to decode and present solutions for the check engine warning. I initially thought that this was my only solution, as it had been at least 2 to 3 years since the last time the check engine light went on. I had forgotten about a much better alternative that I did not recall until I did some web searching for a solution. I searched under the phrase "How to Check Engine Warning Light Toyota 4Runner 2001, or some variation of that. Once I got beyond some bullshit websites, I came across a forum where someone noted to someone else that to check the meaning of their check engine light, they should drive to an Advanced Auto Parts or AutoZone store and ask for free assistance in producing a computer printout of the reason for the check engine light. I was thrilled when I came across this information and remembered that I did this about 3 years ago during a similar instance. I remember at that time driving to an Advanced Auto Parts or AutoZone store and asking a clerk there to provide me with a printout of the meaning of the check engine light warning. So, I Googled for the nearest Advanced Auto store to where I live now and found one just a few miles away. The next morning, I drove to the store and a friendly clerk plugged his small handheld diagnostics device into a slot near the fuse box on the inside of my 4Runner. He then provided me with a printout and gave his interpretation of the reading. It said, System 2 Lean, Bank 1. Basically, this means that an oxygen sensor in Bank 1 detected a lean condition, or too much oxygen in the exhaust. On V6 engines, similar to what I have, Bank 1 is on the side of the engine that has cylinder number 1. The symptoms were that I will not more than likely notice any drivability problems, although there may be symptoms such as a lack of power, detonation, which is a spark knock, or a hesitation or surge on acceleration. What caused this? Well, the mass airflow sensor could be dirty or faulty, or there could be a vacuum leak downstream of the mass airflow sensor. The possible solutions included simply cleaning the mass airflow sensor, inspecting all vacuum and PCV hoses and replace if necessary, and check for a dirty fuel filter and proper fuel pressure. The clerk at Advanced Auto said that it was not a threatening warning and that the car was safe to drive. Because it was safe to drive, he was able to turn off the warning light. He also mentioned that I should write down a code and take the note to the Mr. Tire store next door for a more accurate assessment, and that they would do this for free. I thanked him and proceeded to the Mr. Tire store, where I found a less than helpful clerk who informed me that the reading and code could mean a number of different things, and only after a $126 diagnostics check could he provide a solution to the warning light. He also inaccurately informed me that the $126 charge would be the most competitive I would find in the Fairfax area where I live. I thanked him and went back to my 4Runner. I then called the local Sunoco gas station and asked what they would charge for a diagnostics test. I was told it would cost $86.99 and that the charge could not be applied to any charges related to the solution. I decided at that time not to be concerned with the warning light that was no longer showing whenever I started the vehicle. I have to have an emissions check and an inspection in a couple of months anyways, and if there is a problem, it will show up at that time. So by going to the Advanced Auto Store, I was able to save at least $87, and the 4Runner has been operating in fine condition. One thing I need to do for future reference is to find a mechanic that will apply diagnostic testing charges of warning lights to any work charges. I've been told that that's not possible, so that means I need to investigate to determine possibilities. If I find such a shop or mechanic in Fairfax, I will let you know. I also need to find a preventive checks and maintenance manual that is more detailed than the one that came with my 4Runner. When I was in the Army, that type of manual was what we relied on to troubleshoot any vehicle problem. It's a shame that when you spend $20,000 to $30,000 on a vehicle that the car companies can't think more of their customers to provide them with better advice than to take their vehicle to a dealer to get ripped off. When I brought up this experience with other people at work, I was amused to learn that one person has been driving their car for the past 6 months with the check engine light on. So the basic lesson for me to follow in the future is to first chill out. If the light is not flashing, then my vehicle is not in imminent danger. If the use of the vehicle is not hindered, I should take it to an Advanced Auto Parts store to get a free reading of the warning. If there is a danger or serious problem with driving the vehicle and they are unable to turn off the light, then by that time I should know of a place where I can take the vehicle for a diagnostics test whose charge will be applied to any repair cost. In the meantime, I must be prepared for unexpected costs and manage my savings to be able to absorb a vehicle repair without incurring economic hardship. As I record this, however, I need to get a new battery for my 4Runner, which has been running great for at least 6 years, and as winter approaches, I'm taking it to the local Sunoco store tomorrow. The total charge will be $120. That includes installation, and for that, I will get an Interstate battery with an 84-month limited warranty and up to 125 minutes reserve. That's a lot to ask for out of a battery. That's it for today. Now go and do something useful.